This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
$50,000 spending cash, $5,000 for you and each of your friends for the ultimate viewing experience during the most exciting college basketball weekend of the year, the opening weekend of the tournament. So don't forget to go and listen online for at least an hour a day for your chance to be entered to win the Slam Dunk in Las Vegas. George Ruggiero is producing the program. You can follow him on Twitter on X at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
I am well. Let's tell everybody what we got coming up on the program today. I was thinking about it yesterday when I was speaking with Munns on the afternoon show, and I can't remember if somebody gave him the note or it was his note, but he had pointed out to me that the Tigers this late in the polls, so in February, so whether it be the February 10th poll, 13th, whatever, of your given year, this is the highest that they have been ranked in the poll since February of 2009. At that time, the Tigers were ranked 8th. From my research, this is the latest that the Tigers have been ranked in a poll period since the 2014 season. The Tigers ranked 22nd at the time. So they're basically splitting the difference. And I wanted to start thinking about it like this because Jeff has made note that the Grizzlies start through this many games, there's only been one other season when they have had a better start. And the Grizzlies' position in the standings is better than it was during that season. I believe it was the 14-15 season. And so I wanted to ponder, this late into the season, is this the best that both teams have collectively been? And kind of examine that, because I understand there's an expectations issue. Now with the Tigers, there's a conference issue where while you are clearly the best team in the conference, this is not like John Calipari rolling out a exceptional G League team at worst and taking on Conference USA, just rolling through it, steamrolling everybody. It's not that the talent difference is not quite there. And so why does it feel different? I even think to the extreme it feels a little bit differently with the Grizzlies. So I wanted to discuss that just a little bit. We'll play a game of Believe It or Not during the next segment to get into a few other headlines. We also had the Super Bowl ratings. We had the PR Super Bowl ratings yesterday. And turns out everyone that said they weren't going to watch the Super Bowl, they might have been lying, because it turns out just about everyone was watching the Super Bowl. Although I've always thought, when you look at the number, it's like a third of America. What are the other two-thirds of America doing? I have no idea. So we'll discuss that and a little bit more. Chris Harrington's going to join the program like he does each and every day at 10 o'clock. He has a new piece examining the Grizzlies roster post-trade deadline. Want to get his thoughts on that. And then it's Tuesday, so that means we will have Charles Fishman join the show. We'll have Fish on Friday, on Tuesday, lots to get into. Some hot Penny talk, not Penny Hardaway talk, but hot Penny talk, and get into a few other things happening around the world, maybe some earnings calls, do all of that with Fishman when he joins us around 10:30. But as I was mentioning, George, so I did a little bit of research early this morning, and I was thinking about the question of, is this the best that both the Tigers and the Grizzlies have been at this point in the calendar? So there were a few seasons. The truth is, very rarely does it line up to where both are good at the same time.
Yeah, it feels like that's the way it is in most cities with multiple teams.
I think for a lot of people, they used to believe that was related. I'm a little bit more, I think it's coincidental, but
yeah,
if you look at it in terms of, okay, the peak of the power Tigers under Cal, well, you had Michael Heisley, who basically was never going to spend into the tax, and like that put a clear ceiling on what the team could be. And so what they were very interested in, and I think honestly, probably rightfully so at the time, you had to convince people this could work. And so rather than building the championship team, let's build a good team. And what they did was they built a team that could win in the regular season, and then we saw when they got into the postseason, wasn't to be.
They were just competitive. They were enough to draw people in to say, you know what, this experiment, this location, everything can work. But now, I mean, we've had this as well since, but now we're getting into a couple years now of young talent and, okay, wait, we're trying to see if this can be that championship.
Yeah, I think you also have to, like, contextualize time and place.
Yeah.
The Tigers were still the team. Like, the Tigers were the ones filling the building.
They were the draw.
Correct. They're the ones filling the building, and it takes at least a generation, if not more, for that to change. And so now what we've started to see, though, is the Grizzlies is the team. Doesn't mean the Tigers don't have still a passionate fan base. It's almost just like kind of roles reversed. It was a smaller fan base with the Grizzlies then, but a passionate fan base. Now it's the Grizzlies have the wider fan base, and the Tigers have the smaller, more passionate fan base. So that's kind of, they've kind of just flipped roles. So in terms of teams that have made the tournament, you could say Penny's, the DeAndre, so the two Penny tournament appearances coincide with the Grizzlies finishing second in the West.
Yes.
The thing that I found interesting, though, is when you go back and you think, because, and maybe this is how brains work, but would you say it's fair to say the team that felt the most consistent, the overall best team that Penny's had prior to this team was the DeAndre Kendrick Davis team? So the 21-22 team.
Oh, yeah, clearly.
I beg your pardon. I'm sorry. That is the 22-23 team. So that team is the team that loses in the first round to FAU. Of course, we know what happens. FAU goes on to win. That team was never ranked until the final polls.
That's like kind of surprising. That's pretty surprising.
Now, the way the non-con worked, they didn't have like big, massive opportunities. They got a win over Auburn in Atlanta. Auburn at the time was 11. That put them at 8-2. But then they turned around. They lost to Bama. They had the home win against A&M. But they never really like had the giant push to get ranked. And so when you kind of weigh it out, it's like, okay, I think that team was very good, but can you say that that point in time is better? Because that's another season in which the Grizzlies finished second in the West, but they win the division, but that was also the Ja year.
Yeah.
So then the next year is one that you could also consider. It's the year where the Tigers beat Boise and then have Gonzaga down at the half and they lose in the second round. That at that point in the calendar, the Tigers got ranked as high as 18th in November, but they fell out of the polls the following week. They were never ranked again. So can we still consider? I guess it's also a question of how much do you care about the polls as a reflective measure of how good a college basketball team is?
I think that's probably the better question, especially with a lot of the conversation that we've been having about the current Tigers team in they aren't a metrics darling. We're not talking about, you know, a great KenPom rating or a net rating, but they are consistently in both the coaches poll and the AP poll. That is reflective of this is a team that just keeps winning basketball games.
So there's
but might not be performing necessarily as well as a lot of these other teams.
So I have a little bit of a theory on the metrics.
Okay.
So we also kind of have to recalibrate because while the metrics matter for the middle to higher seeds, the at-large teams that are going to largely have similar resumes, and you got to figure out a way how to separate these teams.
How to parse those out, yeah.
Well, I oftentimes, and maybe this is where being involved in the gambling space to the degree that I am might impact it. I will see, I used the example from a few weeks ago when Tennessee was 8th and Kentucky, I believe, was 12th. And Tennessee hosted them. There were injuries involved, but Tennessee was a 12.5 point favorite. Okay, so I kind of look at it, it's like, I don't really think the top 25 reflects the best 25 teams. I think it's somewhat resume, whatnot. But what is also, what I also acknowledge is when you start to look at the top seeds in the tournament, so when we start to have CBS mocking the here are the top 16 teams, the top four seeds. I assume that'll start here pretty soon, if not.
Probably in the next week or two.
I always feel like it's like right after football season ends.
Yeah.
And they start doing that. All right, if the tournament started today, here's who the top four seeds would be. There is a strong correlation between those teams and the AP poll. Probably a stronger correlation between those teams and their seeding, their ranking, however, if you want to view it as it's essentially getting seeded 1 through 16, it more strongly correlates with the AP top 25 than it does the net rating.
Yeah.
Now, what is also true is that particularly in the AP poll, you will see now the AP poll resembles more metrics than it used to. Whereas oftentimes it just felt like, all right, who are the good teams in this league? What's their record? All right, let's sort it out that way. Now people are looking at KenPom, people are looking at the net, and then they're also looking at resume. I think this is a smart way to do it. Like if you got to turn in 25 teams, you got to figure out how to rank them. I can see going to other source material. So there's a little overlap in the sense that, okay, the AP poll's getting reflective, but now the AP poll's more reflective of metrics too. But the theory that I have right now with the Tigers and the metrics is, number one, as long as the Tigers keep winning, I feel confident in saying this. It doesn't matter.
Oh, absolutely. That's kind of where I was going with it is, how much does it matter if they keep up this pace? To me, it doesn't because, I mean, what's the main goal of the season? What was the goal that was stated at the beginning of the year is to obviously perform better than last season and then to make the tournament?
Yeah, I felt like in general, now some people will say, well, that was lowering the standard. Okay. Sure. I'm not saying that wasn't a lowering of the standard. I also acknowledge, let's look at where this program was in the summer. We had a coach that was lashing out and going on friendly media outlets saying nobody appreciates him. We had the weird David Jones saga and him leaving. And largely, you had a roster that was being put together with a bunch of players that everybody's like, I don't know, man. Maybe.
It could work.
Sure. What I thought was underappreciated about the roster at the time, and I think it's kind of bared out this season. It was a roster that made sense. It wasn't a lot of, I felt like for a long time, Penny was just looking for every 6'7 kid that was long and could defend and couldn't shoot. This time I felt like, all right, you can see there's some guards. There's some front court. There's going to be a clearly established role. And then on top of that, I didn't feel like it was necessarily star chasing. And I think for a while, Penny really fell into that trap. I think they went and decided, let's get good, solid players, and let's put a roster that makes sense together. And on top of that, I think he put a roster that you weren't going to have the pecking order issues. Is this his deepest team? No. But think about where we are right now. This certainly feels like the most stable team he's ever had. And Munns also made the point of, because I've always wondered this as well, if you've covered other programs, particularly in basketball, I'd say basketball and football. Basketball and football are the two. Almost all teams have locker room issues to some degree at some point. What we think is, when teams start losing, oh, it was locker room. When teams start winning, man, they're tight. Good teams have plenty of issues, too.
Auburn.
Yeah, I mean, Auburn.
There was a story of them fighting each other on the plane, and then they go out and sweep the tournament?
Well, Joey Dorsey punched a teammate at the Plush Club once upon a time. So Munz's point was, does it feel more stable because it is more stable, or does it feel more stable because they've gotten rid of leaks and the dramatic, look, here's what's happening on Twitter, whatnot? I would argue it doesn't matter. Either way, that's the sign of more stability. If you're getting rid of the leaks, that's more stable. You've got more control. So I kind of view it as, I don't really care how we got there. If the end result is what the end result is, two thumbs up.
Oh, yeah, this is definitely one of those situations where right now the results, especially on the court, because as much as we can sit here and talk about and kind of bemoan, they're not blowing out a lot of these teams and they're just winning.
Yeah.
Is that not what you just need to do in a conference like this?
Oh, I think we are now at the point, because Cobb and I have talked about this, based on where they are in the rankings.
Just win.
It's not even, like, as long as you, like, they can split this week and they're still going to be ranked. Now, what you can't do is start splitting in the next 3 weeks, go 3-3. Then you will find yourself out of the rankings. And then all of a sudden, we are talking about the net. And, okay, does this matter? My working, uneducated theory of, I don't have the spreadsheet and the algorithm, but this is kind of knowing how power ratings work and understanding how essentially point spreads, aka what you're supposed to, expectations work.
Yeah.
My theory is that the Tigers are not getting credit for winning because when you look at the conference in totality, okay, you've got to rank everybody 1 through 136. And so you're looking at the Tigers playing a team in the 180s, and you're like, well, they should win by 20. Well, what we've seen throughout college basketball is with the freedom of movement, all the rosters, the bad teams that you're playing aren't quite that bad. And the good teams are also, I think this holds true. It does not feel like we have a UConn Death Star team.
No. Oh, no.
And I was open to the possibility that it was Auburn. I think Auburn might be a notch below. I still think Auburn's really good.
Yeah.
But what we have seen is that I don't think a team like the Tigers, who are 40th, should be beating the 180th team by 25. Yet, when it doesn't happen, it hurts you. And so I think what's actually happening is the bad teams aren't nearly as bad as we're used to seeing, and so therefore the expectation of what you should win by has been warped.
It should be adjusted. And on the point that it feels like there isn't this huge team that is just completely dominant, look at last weekend.
Yes.
Plus, like you said, with the freedom of movement of players. Coaches that have a specific style and a specific kind of system, excuse me, have even more capability of getting their type of guys in there. Who anticipated St. John's being in the top 10 at this point in the season? It's because Pitino is able to get in his players.
Whoever is funding Pitino,
well,
I would assume that's who. But I mean, to your point, yes,
he's able to bring in his type of guys, and now all of a sudden you're like, "Whoa, St. John's is really good again. Mm-hmm. How about that?
Wonder how that happened.
Interesting. Now that players can, you know, get a paycheck.
Yes, and so I think the other aspect of this with Memphis is, I think it is a very good team. But it doesn't have the overwhelming talent where they just show up and they're just going to kill everyone.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, I would also argue that's a tip of the cap to Penny Hardaway, because this team is playing really consistently and it's not like they don't have any good wins to show. I mean, Munns made this point yesterday. I still don't know if I'm quite there. But Munns was wondering whether or not the Clemson win on the road is the best win of the season. Because metrically, it's not going to be. I think Clemson's like 28th, 29th. I didn't see the update this morning. I think they were 30 yesterday. But they beat North Carolina, stomped North Carolina at home. And you look at them and they're in position to perhaps win the ACC. I'm still a little hesitant, even though it was a true road game. It's not one of those cases that I would dismiss, but this does become an opinion, and I just personally think the two best wins of the season are either UConn to start the season, and I understand UConn is, at this point, not the juggernaut it was, but they were at the time.
What a weird year for them, by the way.
Well, they've struggled with the injuries with Liam, and then they've...
True.
It turns out also when you have, like, two top 10 picks, that maybe if you lose said two top 10 picks, like... You don't just replenish.
Yeah.
So there's that out. I really think, though, one of the best wins of the season for me was the Michigan State game, because you just played UConn, overtime, emotional, unbelievable game. Like, that is the ultimate, let's look at this game and let's talk about what we did. And then you flipped right around and you played a completely different style of basketball game against Michigan State, and up until, I think, a couple of weeks ago, you were their last loss. And Michigan State is very much in contention to win the Big Ten. I think the Big Ten's better than the ACC. I think the Big Ten is better than the Big East. So, like, to me, those are the two games. But I don't dismiss the argument that it's Clemson. It's just, in terms of what impressed me the most, it's those other two ones.
Yeah, then that also could just, I don't want to say be built on the reputation of those two teams, but I mean, look at what those two teams have obviously done in the past and still have become. I mean, that win against UConn went on an absolute tear there after that loss to Memphis. Michigan State,
well, after Maui,
well,
because we had,
yeah,
to have,
of course,
we had to have Dan Hurley tell us that he's never playing a three-team MTE again. So I had to wonder if he's not going to play the conference tournament.
My bad. Yeah. After they got back after to the Maui, mainland, yeah. Yeah, after Maui, they went on an absolute heater. And Michigan State, in similar fashion, has done just about the same. Having watched that Clemson game, because, you know, that was one of those, it was a weird time.
It was 10 a.m. for us. It was
9 a.m. Is that not?
No, it was 11 a.m.
Oh,
Eastern,
way.
But it was 10 here. But also, it was the middle, it's one of those days where if you wake up and you're intending to watch college basketball and you see the game on at 10, you're like, wait, is this a replay? I thought basketball starts at 11. It's always one of those. Like,
yeah,
we obviously told ourselves, like, we got to be ready for this.
Got to be
so,
up for 10.
So, but the example would be if your team wasn't playing and you always stumble and you see basketball on at 10 a.m., you're always like, wait, what?
Did this happen last night?
Yeah, it's like, is this a highlight? What's going on here? Like, you always have that. So, all that is to say, I feel very good about where the Tigers are. Now, this is where the issue becomes of what is your expectation? Because it all goes back to when you're saying, you know, what's the expectation of the season? For me, it's like when you think about the offseason and the chaos that began the season firing your whole staff, which, hey, right now looking pretty good.
Not a bad decision.
It's not like this team's poorly coached. Again, I'll judge the result. I don't necessarily agree with how it went down. I don't understand the timing of it. Regardless, the results so far are delivering, and that's what matters. That's what that's the business that they are in. They're in the winning business. So now we turn to the Grizzlies. And this is, I think, a more difficult assessment because there is a given timeline with the Grizzlies. It doesn't mean that this is their only shot, next year's their only shot, or it doesn't mean they won't have shots in the next 5 to 10 years. I do think it is interesting to note that the Grizzlies have their second best start ever. They are in second place in the West. I believe they're still the fourth. They still have the fourth best record in the NBA. Let me double check that.
Yeah, where'd that go?
35-17. Yes, they still have the fourth best record in the NBA. And yet there's a feeling of, I don't necessarily say dread, but it's certainly not as fun as you think it should be. And so the question becomes why? Because I think collectively it holds true for both teams. And I'll start with the Tigers and say this. I think the Tigers are through no fault of their own. They are the result of you play in a conference where all you can do is hurt yourself. There is nothing to be gained. There is no, even when the AAC still was bottom of the barrel, you know, like essentially a two-bid league, you still had the Houston game, still had the Cincinnati game. Those games mattered. Now, you don't really have any game that matters to the fans, and all you can do is kind of frantically dread a loss. So that to me makes complete sense. I would also argue with the Tigers right now, you've played yourself into position where just don't lose back-to-back. Because what we're going to see throughout the country is everyone's going to start taking losses. For instance, the number one and two teams in the country lost on the week over the last week, and they maintained their position. 1, 2, and 3, I think, all lost. Because I think, did St. John's pass Duke?
I don't believe so.
So, losses are not killers, if you will. So, with the Grizzlies, though, I think there's a couple of things. Number one, the high-profile games against the big teams have left a decent amount to be desired. There's still good wins in there. Still going to Milwaukee and winning. There's going to Boston and winning. There was beating the crap out of the Warriors. Like, there are still good wins to be had. There's the Houston win at home where you still kind of scratch your head. You're like, how did they do that? Basically, all of the Timberwolves games, there are good wins. But there are also, it's not just getting beat. There are games where they've just gotten outclassed against perceived the best teams. Okay, I think that's a big part of it. I think also the nature of how they have played the season also matters. Number one, the schedule has been softer on the front end. Number two, you are watching them when they go up against bad teams, clobber the bad teams. And I think that inherently causes skepticism in the sense of like, okay, well, this team can beat really bad teams, but can they beat good teams? And so, like, you know what I mean? Like when you just start...
Yeah. There's almost that kind of feeling of, okay, so are we just in that middle tier where we're clearly better than, say, 60% of the league?
Right.
Or are we actually in that top percentile?
I'll use this example. So think back to your alma mater.
Mm-hmm.
They start the season with 4 non-con games, and I mean, I didn't even really want to call them scrimmages.
Oh, they are.
But like, I mean, even the quote-unquote Wake Forest game, you watched the first series and you saw the difference in body types, you're like, this does not matter. Like, they are going to name their score, whatnot. So you get out of those four games and you're wondering, okay, what are we? Then they turn around and they play their first opponent that has SEC talent in Kentucky at home, and they can't block big boy.
Yep.
And they make a couple of critical mistakes and they lose the game. And so all of a sudden in the back of your mind, you're like, I didn't think we were that good. Like, that's just kind of a natural inclination. They were still good.
Yeah.
But they weren't.
They weren't.
Well,
next level.
Like, that's the other thing. It's like, you can't afford to lose those games. That doesn't exist in the NBA, but you still see, like, the mindset that I'm talking about, where it's
there's that thought process. Yeah.
You're like, are we really this good? And then when you see them play someone finally, and then they get popped in a manner that you don't think they should get popped, it causes panic.
That also could be almost a recency issue now with the Grizzlies.
It's
because,
entirely a recency
issue. Because the last thing that we saw from the Grizzlies, which, you know, I understand they go on the road tonight into Phoenix, but the last thing we saw from them was this past weekend getting just absolutely pantsed by an injured, not fully healthy, not at full strength Oklahoma City Thunder team that, as close as that final score was, it was not a close game by any stretch.
No, I felt like this yesterday. The Super Bowl was not 40-22.
That game was not a 12-point game for the Grizzlies.
Yes.
It's the same thing.
Yes.
It was.
And we know what we saw.
It was absolutely just, and it was all the things that you hoped and prayed it wouldn't be. If it was a style issue, if it was just, okay, they had one or two guys go on, you know, have a crazy hot night, but your guys kept it close. No, this was, they got outworked. They got out efforted on the glass. It's a both all that, and it's a bad matchup because they don't have their size and physicality all there yet. I mean, Lou Dort's one of the more physical defenders in the league.
Same. I mean, that's what he's built his reputation on.
So is Chet.
Yeah.
Chet's huge and also a great rim defender.
Yeah.
And instead, you had guys like, I mean, I understand Isaiah Hartenstein is also one of the better rebounders in the league, but him, Isaiah Joe, you know, SGA clearing the glass.
Yes.
It's the last thing you wanted to see out of that team, and it's the last thing we all saw out of that team.
And I think in the back of everyone's mind, this is where I do think it is fair to wonder.
Yeah.
The Grizzlies, are they really going into a playoff run and going to be playing two rookies at, I mean, who knows if, like, I honestly think, by the time we get to the playoffs, presuming health, I think Vince Williams is going to be ahead of Jalen Wells.
I think that's fair.
But there's also an argument to be made. Jalen Wells offers more offense and
adequate, more than adequate defense.
Correct. So maybe you decide, okay, Vince is going to play a ton of minutes, but he's not going to technically start. Well, then with Edie, it's like, it seems still likely to me, barring injury, Edie's going to start games at center. Brandon does not like to start. Brandon prefers to, I think, be in that kind of 25-minute range, like where you can just max out. I don't think Marvin Bagley III is going to wind up taking that spot. There's no evidence to suggest, but I guess I'm open to the possibility if he steps up, whatnot, like, okay. But I think in the back of everyone's mind, everyone's going, okay, this team has a lot of guys, but when you get to the playoffs, depth becomes less of a positive. And are they going to be built to compete 1-8?
That's a fair question, because as much as we love seeing, well, a lot of us do, like seeing this many, you know, types of rotations, because on the other hand, you look at it and say, okay, this depth is really good because you're able to not put as much stress on your guys as some of these other teams that are playing. I mean, the one that always sticks out to me is look at how much the Knicks are playing their, you know, starting five because they have no depth. Those guys get burnt out by the time the playoffs come around. Whereas with the Grizzlies, we can go in and say, okay, our guys are relatively fresh compared to that level of effort because they have such a deep bench. That said, you really want continuity and that level of gel in the playoffs that they might not have, because how many different lineups do we see every game?
Oh, I mean,
not even in the span of the season
so
far.
You can tell at times certain situations dictate they get off the script. Like if
100%.
Like when we saw it with Edie and Wembanyama, when Wembanyama just decided, okay, well, I'm not going in there. I'm just going to sit out here and line it up from three, and he hits his first two or three. I can't remember. It's like, okay, Zach,
we got to pull him.
Yeah.
Because he's not going to go out and defend the perimeter.
Correct. And we saw it on Saturday with Jalen, you know.
That was
a tough matchup.
He was getting torched.
I'm not sitting there going, Jalen Wells is the only guy that SGA got the last 2 weeks.
No. SGA is...
In fact, like, he held him under 50. You can at least make that case.
There are a couple guys who can't say that.
Right. So you can at least hang your hat on that. He was below his average from the previous 2 weeks. So you have that. But I guess for me, the kind of the bigger picture, though, is maybe we should just kind of enjoy the ride, because what else do we got? Like, in the end, like, we watch sports to watch winning. We're seeing a lot of winning. Maybe we should enjoy the ride a little bit more. All right, when we come back, let's play a game of Believe It or Not. We'll get into a few other headlines. We'll do that next right here on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
ESPN. Chris Harrington has a piece up over at the Daily Memphian taking a look at the Grizzlies roster after the trade deadline. We'll discuss that and more from the NBA with Chris. Before we do that, let's play a game of Believe It or Not. All right, George. The Dallas Mavericks were right to eject fans for voicing their displeasure with the Luka trade. So for those that have missed it, here's what happened last night. From Tim McMahon. With emotions from the Luka Doncic trade were still raw, multiple fans were ejected in the second half of the Dallas Mavericks' 129-128 loss to the Sacramento Kings on Monday at the American Airlines Center due to the violations of the NBA's code of conduct, according to a team spokesman. Each incident prompted boos from the crowd. Mavericks Governor Patrick Dumont, whose family purchased the majority share of the franchise from Mark Cuban last season, was loudly booed when he returned to his seat, courtside seat, with 2:56 remaining in the third quarter. Two of the fans held large poster board signs that read, "Fire Nico," a reference to Dallas general manager Nico Harrison. One of these men was seen mouthing, "Fire Nico," on the video board earlier in the game before the camera quickly panned out. Quote, in the first incident, the guests brought in a sign that broke the following rule included in the NBA code of conduct. Clothing, garments, or signs displaying explicit language, profanity, or derogatory characterizations towards any person. Mavericks Vice President of Corporate Communication, Aaron Feingold, gotta feel bad for her, said in a statement released to reporters. Harrison has been subject to harsh backlash since agreeing to the February 2nd shocking blockbuster deal that was built around sending five-time first-team All-NBA selection Doncic to the Lakers, bringing 10-time All-Star big man Anthony Davis to Dallas. Appropriate or not?
Whether it's appropriate or not, it's hilarious because it is so soft. It is so soft. How many owners or how many general managers across sports have to hear this day in and day out, excuse me, and don't do anything about it?
So I tend to agree. So my whole deal is I think in general, the NBA is the softest when it comes to chirping.
Oh, 100%.
Like, I don't think if you say, "Nice shot, Westbrook," Westbrook should be able to snap his fingers, point, and get you kicked out.
No, come on.
I also acknowledge there's some kind of line.
Oh, absolutely.
With that said, how many T-shirts do you think in the American Airlines Center read "Fire Nico"? I'm guessing hundreds?
Probably quite a bit.
And there's also this reality. You have publicly announced that you are refunding season ticket holders that are upset about the move. Sometimes you just got to let people be mad, because here's the other thing I would always tell them. I don't think these people are ever very savvy and good at PR, despite being usually successful people. You do realize by bringing attention to this, you are making it worse.
Like you said, I feel bad for their actual PR person.
Yeah, no, the person that actually
who has to announce all this.
Correct.
I feel bad for her more than anyone.
Correct.
Because this is...
Because now what you've done is you've started to make martyrs. And now you're going to start to make copycats. And it's now going to be a thing where, all right, they traded away my favorite player. I don't really care about going to the game. I'm going to have me a moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, truly, this is the trade itself kicked the anthill and just knocked it over. Doubling and tripling down on this by, one, showing absolute favor to season ticket holders and refunding their money, and then saying, oh, just for criticizing us, and it's not like any of those signs that I saw or T-shirts actually included any profanity or anything really that bad. It was just calling for their head.
Right. If this says
they've lit the anthill on fire at this point.
There's one thing if this is obscene.
Oh, of course. Like you said, there's a line. I don't believe that was crossed.
Yeah, I mean, if it says F Nico or they're holding up signs, like the guy clearly was mouthing Fire Nico and the signs read Fire Nico. Like, this is always just the, man, you give people like in power that are not used to hearing any criticism and all of a sudden, like, they just turn into 12-year-olds. Like, they go tell the teacher. This is Charmin soft.
It really is. It's four-ply is what it is. I mean, these are towels. Think about this. You're talking to someone who is a Rays fan. How often do you think Stu Sternberg has to hear fire Stu or sell the team?
Well, I mean, heck, before the Giants, I want to say it was the second to last home game, they started paying to have
the planes
like, yeah. Sell the team. I got news for all Giants fans. The Mariners and Tisch will not be selling said team.
I don't see that happening.
I don't think this makes their case better.
Oh, no.
Harrison, who did not attend Saturday's game, was in the arena Monday night, but did not sit in his usual seat in the lower bowl of the stands. Arena security has been strictly enforcing NBA rules limiting the size of fan signs since the trade. Two men, including one who wore Doncic's Slovenia national team jersey, were ejected late in Monday's contest after a shouting match with Mark Cuban, who was in his regular baseline seat by the Mavericks bench. Quote, shut the F up and sit the F down, Cuban yelled to footage of a fan, footage a fan showed to ESPN. Cuban told ESPN that the fans, whose seats were approximately 20 rows behind him, were yelling, Fire Nico. And while the Mavericks were shooting free throws, and again during a critical possession late in regulation, Cuban said he did not curse until the fans pointed and shouted at him, although he did not know what they said. Quote, in the second incident, the fan wore a T-shirt that also broke the rule cited and was also intoxicated, disruptive, and uncooperative, all listed in the NBA fan code of conduct. Okay, well, if we're just going to start, tossing out every fan that's intoxicated,
oh, these fans are going to be empty.
We're losing 30% of the fan base. Other fans told ESPN that one of the ejected fans wore a T-shirt that depicted a woman's face with a clown nose. They could not clearly identify the woman, so clearly that I would assume would be Adelson, however you say it,
I would believe.
And she got the Goodell, Portnoy, the clown nose treatment. Again,
that T-shirt's fine.
I mean, what's obscene?
And you know what? As much as I don't want to give Cuban a pass, the only thing I'm going to give him a pass for is the fact that he said he did it because they were partially because, one, they yelled at him directly, and because they were doing it during free throws. Come on, know the rules, guys.
Yeah.
That breaks the code a little bit to do it, like, in...
I'm with you on that. I still don't know how to quite view, like, in the end... You don't own the team anymore.
No, I mean, he's just there.
Like, apparently, there's now reports, and this is, I always feel like this is kind of like a...
Is he trying to buy back in or something?
No. that theory is Adelson's moved the team to Vegas. The NBA is obviously not going to abandon the fourth largest media market.
Come on.
And so they would get an expansion team, and Cuban gets the expansion team. That's that theory.
See, but thing is, that puts them at, what, 31?
Well, they would assume, are they bringing Seattle in, or, I mean, more skeptical on Seattle, but, like...
Seattle's got an arena now.
Correct, but who is the primary tenant?
the Kraken.
The NBA does not want to go to new markets where they're not the primary tenant.
Well, would they wouldn't be the primary tenant of T-Mobile if that's where they go.
So I don't think they would be going to T-Mobile. There is a plan for, yes, I know you're sitting down for this and everybody thinks, you know what Vegas really needs? Another arena?
A third one because they're building one for Oakland A's? Come on.
I believe they're saying, I can't remember if it's the south side of the strip, so I don't know if it's by, I don't think it would be the south side of the strip because that's kind of where T-Mobile is. I think they were saying like a little bit past like the Wynn Resorts World on the north end. Yeah. Whole new like $2 billion arena. So that would be that theory. They're not, yes, no, I agree with you. They would not be the primary tenant. The idea is they're building them a new arena.
That's insanity, by the way. That's crazy.
All right. People love to watch the Kansas City Chiefs.
Before this season, and I think before very specifically how they played this year, you could make that argument, but this year, absolutely not.
Okay, so here would be the only rebuttal.
Because I think they played boring football this year.
They
boring, but winning.
They definitely played boring football. So when you look across the board, NBA or NFL ratings were down about 2% this year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that also lines up with typically every election year, ratings in comparison go down. So there is that. The problem, though, is do you know in a league where ratings were consistently going down, what team was bucking the trend every time?
Kansas City?
Correct. Now, some would point out, well, they were featured in prime time. The problem, though, is when you started comparing them even to last year, I don't think Taylor showed up as many games. She was clearly not featured as prominently as she was last year. So I don't necessarily buy the whole Taylor Swift phenomenon, although I suppose you could say you're having the Swifties watch more frequently. I just really think what it comes down to is we human nature's to like hate watch.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, that was me during the World Series this year.
Yeah, I mean,
my only thing, and this is another thing that I think ended up probably hurting ratings, is just how many different random places they were broadcasting games this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's only going to get worse.
Oh, I know, which I'm not happy for. I mean, between Amazon, ESPN, ESPN Plus, NFL Network Plus for Saturday games, and then Netflix?
Well, and also they announced last week, fans first, we will have more streaming playoff games. Yeah, so that's exciting. So the projected number from Fox is 126 million. The audience peaked at 135.7 million across all platforms. That included Tubi and Fox Deportes and Telemundo. So all the digital platforms as well. That was a record. So,
of course.
And it wasn't exactly an entertaining game. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Chris Harrington joins the program. Let's get his thoughts on the Grizzlies post-deadline when he looks at the roster. We'll do all that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Wow, beg your pardon, the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ah. Can't you see it? A glistening 100 megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.